Hello, everybody. If you're here looking for session number one, climate action planning, new champions, this is it, and we're going to get started. Thank you so much for everyone coming. It's wonderful to reconnect with, I won't say old friends, longtime friends, and meet new ones. This is going to be a session this morning to talk about climate action planning, kind of getting started. We have two great speakers. I now have been educated on how to pronounce their last name, so I will be able to do that. We have Albert Armijo, thank you, all right, who is the Director of Planning Services for the City of Aliso Viejo in South Orange County. His planning career included public sector and private sector experiences, and Albert currently is supervising the preparation of the Aliso Viejo Green City Initiative, which not only will serve as the city's climate action plan slash sustainability plan, but will be used to inform land use, circulation, recreation, and open space changes in the imminent comprehensive update of the general plan. Albert has, two Bachelor's of Arts degrees from the University of California, Irvine, and a master's degree from Indiana University, and he is an ABD. Does everybody know what ABD is? All but dissertation work in the PhD program at UC Berkeley. So we're going to look forward to hearing what Albert says. Let me give you the next speaker, Van Dienhoven, I lost my written note on that, is going to be our next speaker. And Deborah is going to talk about how the city of Palo Alto, which is just north of here, I was going to say south, north of here. Palo Alto has been a leader in environmental issues and climate protection, having developed one of the first climate protection plans and inventories for a small city in Northern California. They did that in 2007. Deborah, who is the assistant to the city manager for sustainability, is going to talk about the process and the community that made this happen, as well as touch on some of the current and related sustainability programs that Palo Alto is doing. Deborah comes from the private sector as vice president at a global real estate management firm where she focused on sustainable real estate development projects for large Fortune 500 customers. She's an architect by background, a lead AP, and a sustainable building advisor. She currently works on many environmental interdepartmental projects for the city. Deborah has a BA in Fine Arts from the University of Toronto, Bachelor's of Architecture from the University of Waterloo, and a Master's of Science in Real Estate Development from Columbia University. I think we're going to start with Albert. And Albert, did Lindsay show you just need to load up your slide and you can do away with the beacon slide if you'd like. Each of the speakers is going to talk about 10, 15 minutes, and then we want to have time for questions and discussion from all of you.
Good morning and welcome. Thank you very much. It's a privilege to be here. I look forward to learning a lot, too, from everybody else here on the panel and then this afternoon. Aliso Viejo is, for those of you who aren't familiar, it's a fairly small city in South Orange County. It's about 7 square miles in area, which is roughly the size of Santa Monica. We're bordered by the four lagunas, Beach, Niguel, Woods, and Hills. We're fairly close to the coast, just over the hill from Laguna Beach. We have about 48,000 residents right now. We incorporated 10 years ago, just celebrating this whole year we're spending in celebrating the 10-year anniversary. The one there are several amenities that we feel we have in the city. Every resident of the city lives within 3 miles at most of the town center core area, the commercial and entertainment area in the city. There are views spectacular across South Orange County because it's a lot of the city is hillside and area. There are things like that. But so there's a lot of positive things we feel about that. What I call the meta narrative of our Green City Initiative, which we wanted to call our climate action plan something different, like imply process and imply change and dynamism. So we didn't want to have a static, the council felt it was a kind of more of a static term to refer to it as climate action plan for us, but it can be called, of course, many things. The council, a little over a year ago, city council, after listening to me at 4 or 5 sessions before the council, decided to direct me to produce or supervise the production of the Green City Initiative. Now, the council wants to improve what we already feel is a great quality of life that residents and businesses enjoy. And we also wanted to respond to the recession, ongoing recession. Even though our city, luckily, we're very fortunate, has been in great financial health, we've been able to, and this plays a part in what I feel in the Green City Initiative for us, we've been able to put money in reserves every year. There's never been a year that we're even or thinking about layoffs or anything that's not even discussed. So we've been very, very fortunate. We wanted to improve the already great quality of life. We wanted to enhance our competition with other South Orange County cities, San Clemente, Laguna Hills, et cetera, Mission Viejo, that are around us. And we looked at some data. I looked at with ULI and some other people I know in the industry, and I have 2 kids in their 20s, and talking to their friends and them, and just, you know, a plethora of different people, we found that a larger share of Generation Y wants to live or would prefer to live closer to where they play and where they work. They're not as intent as boomers are about having a lawn and a, you know, suburban existence or anything like that. So we're responding to that. We have that kind of amenity, you know, being the small city and everybody living close to the, or within 3 miles of the commercial corridor. So we want to retain what we have, attract, and then maintain an additional tech-savvy young workforce. We're lucky in that we have a major UPS distribution center there. We have Fleur, we have Lennar, we have Shea Properties, we have Clarion Industries, Amber Genetics. There's quite a bit of diversity among the area businesses in size and also in inclination. So we want to attract, you know, people like that to stay and of course, spend money in the city, enhance revenue. So we're thinking of the future in that respect. The council's thinking of that, too. We also wanted to be developer and business friendly because we have several large parcels in town that aren't developed. Most people would look at Lisa Vanya and say, wow, it's 90% developed. Yes, but there's a lot of rethinking about, even now, 20 years out, and 25 years out, what our city could look like at that point in time, in addition to planning for the new areas in town. I keep forgetting to push this. Now, we also wanted to build on what we felt was a solid basis in the general plan of conservation ordinances and practices that the city presently requires. Regarding, you know, water conservation, landscape conservation, high percentage of recycling requirements, styrofoam prohibition, et cetera, working with restaurants about processing food waste and composting, things like that. We want to build on that. And we also wanted to distinguish the Green City Initiative from the actions of other cities in Orange County, okay, to kind of enhance a competition. How do we do that? And especially in our city, boom, the first thing we want to talk about is saving money for residents and for business owners. That was imperative in this effort and getting the council to go along and say, just do it. Very, very important. And that sparked a lot, of course, a lot of community interest. Therefore, what we do is we want to involve, and we have, all sectors of the community, but particularly as a huge, I'll talk about it in a few minutes, emphasis to involve city businesses within the city, small and large, in this, regional business organizations, volunteer organizations such as churches, and importantly, really importantly in this, the student population. We have Lisa Nagel High School in town that services the student population in Laguna Niguel and Aliso Viejo, and several middle schools in town. So we really want to involve the students. It is their future. We learned also, importantly, I think, from some of the good points and maybe not quite as good points from what happened to two other cities who tried this effort in their plans. So that's fine. I mean, that's the essence of research, and that's the essence of looking at this, is finding how you can build on the experience of others. I learned a lot from doing research into other climate action plans, sustainability plans, etc. There are some excellent plans, excellent plans that we built, that we borrowed from, including Palo Alto's, including West Hollywood's, including Benicia's, Santa Monica, etc. Just excellent, I thought, that could work in Aliso Viejo. That's another important point. We want to find something that works in our city. Cities differ tremendously, as you're aware. There are only, right now, that I know of, four cities in Orange County that have approved or sanctioned, the councils have sanctioned a climate action plan. Laguna Beach, I believe, Huntington Beach, Irvine. And
I think Irvine, yeah.
Yeah, Irvine, and I'm forgetting the fourth one.
There.
I don't know if Newport has. They're in the process. But there's several, of course, that are in the process of doing their own thing and what they need for their city. San Clemente, Mission Viejo for a different reason, Fullerton, etc. So we're all, the planning directors get together once a month, but and this is a topic that we bat around, and everybody's got different needs in the cities. But importantly, UCLA offered, unfortunately, the budget through their extension, makes it intermittent now, a series of extension classes that pertain to climate action planning. Climate action plans in CEQA, climate action plans in the general plan, how to write a general plan. I learned a lot from Monica Gilchrist, who conducted one of the series of plans, and she's going to be leading a session this afternoon on climate action planning. Also, it's important, some of the things we learned, to really keep the council informed. Status reports, weekly reports if your city has that, things like that, to really get the council going. I'm really fortunate, and I'm not going to say this for this is the honest way, I'm really candid. If you knew me, you know, I'd be very candid. Our council, I'm very fortunate in that they really, to use a very over cliche, they really do think outside the box. If you present them with data that's compelling and a cogent argument, they're not afraid, if they think it's in the best interest for the city, to say go for it. And they'll consider pretty much anything. And I'll talk about this in a few minutes, but they're gonna really be surprised, I hope, with some of the things we're doing with the general plan update, and this relates to this. So we formed a working group and a Green City team. The Green City team is staff, combination of staff, and we're investigating how to get LEED certification for our city hall, which is a fairly small building. I think San Jose has that, was awarded some sort of a LEED certification. This started when our city manager came up for a conference, and he toured the city hall up here, and we want to make that happen for Aliso Viejo City Hall. We decided on 2008 as a baseline year for calculations because we were dirt in 1990. It was a sheep ranch. Literally, it might have been 200 or 300 homes in the whole area at that time. This was okay. This is one of the things we did. We of course started, and this has been, I call this a pratfall, calculating the citywide greenhouse gas emissions footprint has been the mother of all pains to me, because nobody quite seems to agree on our work. We have a great work team. One thing I prize about the working group, I'd encourage everybody, to try and form us. We don't all agree politically, whatever, on this kind of situation, or, you know, scientifically, even things like that about methodologies, and we really bat that around. But we were able to come to a consensus, you know, on pursuing this, and it's really worked so far. But we started out, I'm going to give you an example. We started out with a certain methodology. We calculated the share of our greenhouse gas emissions to be from transportation to be over 80%, which is like 20% more than Southern California as a whole, something like that. So we thought, that can't be right. Another set of eyes looked at it. Another set of eyes. This is the third set of eyes is looking at it, and thank goodness for ICLEI, they're the fourth set of eyes now that they're looking at it. And as near as we can come up, you can see the percentages here. Transportation's roughly 60% or 59%, electricity use, et cetera. One thing that's startling there, municipal facilities, 0.28%. Now, that's good in that it reflects. We only own four facilities in our city. Another unique thing, we own the City Hall, we own Aliso Viejo Ranch, we own our conference center and our aquatic center. Five facilities. We own a family resource center in a middle of a park. What's unique to the city too is we have a master community association, the Aliso Viejo Community Association, that owns all the slopes. It owns 21 of the 23 parks, landscape areas, etc. So we're integrally involved with AFCA. So we're in the process now of setting our reduction targets. Basically, the short of it is that we feel we can really, really do some damage to our footprint. And by damage, I mean really get under any requirements and really kind of set an example for the rest of South Orange County, because we have some good data now to work with. The next point I want to emphasize is community outreach. This is the one thing I've learned as far as our city, and I think other cities, especially in Orange County. I learned kind of from an example of some other cities. Berkeley, for instance, had a great community outreach program in their climate action plan. We conduct a series of public workshops. We stage an annual sustainability forum. We have regular email blasts to several thousand people. We were featured in the American Planning Association newsletter for Orange County. And importantly, we reach out to business organizations. I mean the Building Industry Association of Orange County, the Orange County Business Council, the California Realtors Association, et cetera. Anybody who calls me, any organization who calls me and wants to meet, we meet. Or wants me to present something, I present on that. And we reach out. We even notice our public workshops with flyers hand-delivered, thank goodness for interns, to every business in the city. We've started and managed a Green City Initiative webpage linked to the city webpage. We have a Facebook page, a Twitter account, which I have no idea how it works. I just know I get all these messages. We are featured in patch.com regularly. I'm sure you're familiar with that one, Aliso Viejo page. I've been interviewed for public television, and they're going to do a follow-up interview with me later this year, along with one of our planning commissioners. And importantly, we have a big effort with, like I mentioned before, with the student population. We have a very dedicated small core of high school students who are organizing the social media contacts and everything else, and we really have a lot of interest in the students, which is really great. And they come to the city council meetings and they speak. They come to the public workshops and they speak. They get their parents interested. So we have the outcrop of this is that we've had a lot of community support, of course, and I'll elaborate on that in a second. Our public workshops for our city, just as an example, the budget hearing, in the final budget hearing and stuff in June, and the preliminary one, we had two people in the audience who were not related to one of the council members or the significant other of staff or anything like that. Two for that whole series of the budget hearings, how the city's going to spend the money. Anyway, I was floored. We've had 83 different people, who've signed in anyway, and attended our public workshops. For our city, this is like incredible. This is a crowd. This is like, you know, get the fire authority and, you know, take care of it somehow. That's great. We staged, I put down some of the topics that we discussed here, ranging from, you know, a colloquial discussion on what we're going to do, energy conservation, water conservation, vehicle management. These are run as a seminar, very informal, a lot of graphics used. That's really important, the visual. I have an excellent, excellent, Forma does my graphics. They're excellent producers of that. We produced a series of boards, large posters mounted on boards for city council to see the initiatives. The initiatives are kind of roughly the equivalent of goals. The community came up with those. So I could translate that directly into the city council and say, this is what the community feels after our discussions, and they're kind of washing what we're saying and things like that, what the community would like to see, the direction of the city regarding sustainability or something that's related. We got some really good, we got a lot of really good comment on that that I'll talk about in a minute. So we had a series of public workshops. We're starting another series in the fall. The public workshops initial series in the spring were on goals, otherwise initiatives, and starting about policies, and now it's time the rubber hits the road, the implementation measures, how we get there. That's going to be the framework or the paradigm for the series in the fall. I had regular, as I mentioned before, updates to the city council. We are filing, this is another important consideration, grant applications. They're out there. I mean, you can apply for these things. Who knows who's going to get them? We all know, we've tried. Right now, we have a couple in I'm really optimistic about getting, and one exciting one I hope we get, when I'm talking out of school, is the urban greening, citywide urban greening plan. This will fit right into what we want to do, because in one of the most important considerations of our citizens, the attendees at the workshop, they want community gardens splashed throughout the city. They want a complete streets design, making it safe for pedestrians and, you know, non-motor vehicles to traverse the city. So we're doing that. Now, am I okay on time? Okay, I'll hurry. I'm sorry. Importantly, the relationship to the general plan update, we're starting a comprehensive update. We have kind of the perfect storm of all the planning in Aliso Viejo, this Green City Initiative, our comprehensive general plan update, the environmental work is all coming together. Politically, making this happen is the most important thing for me. And I mentioned I was going to be candid. Politics are utmost. When I talk about pratfalls and what I've learned, community, business. You cannot ignore them. Some cities I know did, and they did not, were not successful in getting their initiative or their climate action plan in the scope they wanted passed. We have the support of the business community. Do we have the support of everybody? Here's one pratfall. No, we don't. There is a group, I won't mention with whom they're affiliated, tried to disrupt the workshop, scared a lot of people off, actually physically scared a lot of people off, things like that. They're still active in South Orange County. They think that their premise is, and I'm not misrepresenting this, is that this is part of a United Nations plot to redistribute wealth, deny them rights, etc., things like that. So, you know, we do have some opposition opposition in town. One of the things I've learned at the Green City Initiative or Climate Action Plan can be a real mechanism, a definitive mechanism for establishing community pride and community involvement. This is important across intergenerations. It's not a reading group at the library. It's everybody interested in it. Students, single people, etc. We've been able to do that. It's important in educating people also about the relationship between sustainability and conservation and land use. That is, I think, very, very important. It's also important, I mentioned the business community, again, I'll say it again, to get their support. They can kill it. I'm just flat out, they can hurt it, they can modify it, they can do. So if we involve them and say, what can you do? This is where we get into voluntary versus mandatory. Here's where here's where the problems could occur. I keep getting asked, well, how much of this is going to be mandatory? Well, like, I don't know yet, you know. Most of it has to be voluntary to work. I think small steps are important in getting to the mandatory. Obviously, some things have to be mandatory. We don't want to write a pretty plan and it sits on the shelf and it's not implemented. Flexibility is really important. As you go through the process, modify the process. It's not, you know, concretized. You've got to modify it according to community needs and the political realities and input you get. And that includes timing, content of the document, the way you approach, you know, community outreach, etc. That's the thing that I really want to emphasize. And the last thing I want to emphasize, it's a work in progress. It always should be a work in progress. That's just the way it is. It'll be changing according with new needs and new desires. Thanks.
Thank you. We're going to take questions at the end, but thank you, Al. That was great. Al touched on, I think, an emerging segment of those who are looking at the sustainability movement. And I think we need to distinguish those folks who have a right to their opinion, even if we disagree with them. I think we need to distinguish those folks from what have been previously referred to as climate skeptics, because at least the research that I've seen is there are people that disagree not only is climate change happening, or if it is happening, is it caused by human activity or it's natural, but nevertheless, most of those folks understand the importance of energy efficiency, resource conservation. They embrace it. They like good planning. They understand the mix of walkable communities, economic development, vibrant communities, everything we've been talking about today. And they just come at it from a different perspective. And I think we are all aware of those. So I think we just need to be careful, embrace our skeptics, understand where they're coming from, and as Al said, bring them into the process. But though that segment of the community is, I think, separate from the newly evolving one that is indeed looking at some of this as a grand conspiracy. So we're going to go to Deborah and hear about what Palo Alto is doing, and then we're going to have some conversation among ourselves.
Thank you so much. So my name is Deborah Van Dienhoven. I'm the assistant to the city manager for sustainability. I'm actually in the city manager's office, not in planning or utilities or public works or anything like that. So I'm actually in the city manager's office, which means I work cross-departmentally, and I coordinate many of the programs and the communication to the community. I coordinate a lot of initiatives with the community. We have over 150 programs that are about sustainability. They are either about reducing greenhouse gas emissions, water use, energy consumption, about protecting our natural environments, about our parks and things like that. So it's very diverse. So that said, I thought I'd start with something that most of you all know is the definition of sustainability. And it's actually also our sustainability policy, which was adopted in 2001. It's quite a long time ago. So it's been a focus for council and for the city of Palo Alto for a long time. In fact, environmentalism has been a focus in Palo Alto for a long time. In the 70s, we had a recycling center. We had many energy efficiency programs with our utilities departments. And even at the water quality control plant, we had many initiatives there that went above and beyond many of the compliance requirements. So what is Palo Alto? It's close by. It's a small town. We'd like to say it's the birthplace of Silicon Valley. If you guys don't know, this is where HP was started in 38. So a long time ago, where the computers basically got started in Palo Alto, I'd say. And we take pride in that. And we continue today along that line with a lot of new companies that are the heart of the tech industry, but also at the heart of the green tech industry. So we have Tesla in Palo Alto. We have Better Place. They are the EV leaders. We also have, obviously, HP still there, and they are very green. They have many, many sustainability initiatives, SAPs there. And they also, covered with solar panels, and they have EVs as part of their fleet, and many initiatives that they have. Stanford's in Palo Alto. We work closely with them, and they have a number of initiatives. And we also have local businesses or nonprofits like Wave One trying to green businesses in Palo Alto. So it's very, very interesting. Just to highlight, we're a small town, 66,000 residents, so not that much bigger. We're very small. We double or triple during the day, some people say. We have a utility that provides electric, gas, water, wastewater, and fiber telecom. And 66% of our electricity, or thereabouts, is non-carbon based. So, also, I'd just like to highlight, we have many more companies that exist in Palo Alto, but I think there's a lot of case studies in Palo Alto where being green makes you green, and we like to highlight that. And there's a lot of conferences, and there's a lot of shared initiatives amongst the companies there as well. So why are we so green? Why is Palo Alto doing what we're doing? And we can just bring it back to the climate change. Locally, the effects of climate change are likely to reduce the availability of water-powered electricity, increase the amount of forest fires, create water and food shortages, and lead to the rise of sea level or water level in San Francisco Bay. And that all impacts Palo Alto. Globally, it's nearly universally recognized by scientists and much of the public as one of the most important threats facing our society. And I think we all know that. I can go on and on, but I think we probably know about climate change. And I like to show this slide because people don't realize this. 1 meter sea level rise, if some of you are not from here, that line is 101, which you may have been on, and that's 1 meter sea level rise, or 1.4 meter sea level rise, which, depending on the scientists you talk to, it could be by 2100. So 16 inches by 2050 would just be along the bay, but a meter would then sort of come into Palo Alto significantly past 101. And there's also bigger maps where it shows that, SFO would be underwater and many other very important things in the Bay Area. So just broadly, I mentioned we have over 150 programs in Palo Alto. I've broadly categorized them into the following seven areas. They are linked. Just to chime back on climate change, it's not just about climate change. We do have a lot of skeptics in Palo Alto, even though there is environmental focus for many people. But even if you don't believe in climate change, everybody likes a clean park. Everybody likes to save money. There's other initiatives that you can look at from a different perspective. So climate change and adaptation, we have that sort of category work group that includes the greenhouse gas inventories and mitigation measures. Energy supply and conservation includes demand management, smart grid, and alternative sources. Water conservation and resource management includes water quality, stormwater. We have stormwater rebates, wastewater and bay water quality. Natural environment includes a lot. Includes land use issues, stewardship programs, our parks, our open space, biodiversity, invasive plant species, contaminated site, green purchasing practices, air quality, and toxins. So that's a lot in that area. Waste and materials includes our zero waste program, which I'll touch on, reuse, recycling, composting, and cradle initiatives. The built environment includes urban planning, comprehensive plan, construction demolition ordinances, and our green building ordinance. And transportation includes SB 375 and AB 32. We have shuttles in Palo Alto. We have alternative commute strategies, bike routes, and high-speed rail, which you may know about, EVs, and all other forms of transportation. So we have a work group that looks at that. The challenges that I have is that there's a lot. There's a lot, and these are multi-departmental issues. So it's not just one department. It's not just planning. It's not public works. It's not just utilities. It's all of us have to come together to make these initiatives a reality. So just back up here, we were one of the first small cities in Northern California to have a climate protection plan. It was in 2007. And how it came about was staff, we had an assistant city manager who was very focused on this. We had council that was very focused on it. So staff, council, and the community formed a Green Ribbon Task Force in 2006. And they met for a year, and they produced a report that had couple hundred initiatives or ideas of what Palo Alto could do. Staff took that report and developed the climate protection plan in 2007 and developed these actions and emissions reduction goals. So our goals by 2009 for city operations to reduce by 5%, we exceeded that by 7%. We reached 12% reduction in 2009. We were very, very happy. Mostly because of our water quality treatment plant, the initiatives we took there, which was significant. We have a 5% citywide goal by 2012. Sorry, it's miswritten there. I apologize. And just to give you an idea, the city operations emissions are about 4% of the community's emissions. And as Al pointed out, transportation is actually one of our large sector, not quite as large as yours. Ours is about 40-45% transportation for our community. So the city operations, we're doing a heck of a lot, but if we're only 4% of the entire cities, the community cities, I mean, reaching 5% is a big goal. Reaching 15% by 2020 is a very big goal as well. So we definitely are reaching out to the community to try and do many, many things. And so I'm going to talk about a few of the things we're doing. Internally, I manage the greenhouse gas emissions reports, and we use a software called Hurrah. We were actually one of their first customers. They're here locally. Don't know if you guys have seen it. It's a dashboard which basically calculates your emissions from all the different sources, and it can display it in many, many different ways. We are in the 2.0 version of it. We're trying to automate it, which means it would come up automatically with our utility bills, would just be automatically uploaded, and the information would be there for city operations. And then we're also extending it to the community as well. So we'd have it clearly available to anybody to see where we stand on a monthly, most likely basis, because that's when our utilities bills go out. It's actually a very, very good tool. You can look at it in many different ways. It's not just about emissions, it's about consumption. We are going to have it on a per building scale right now. We currently have it on per department, because that's kind of how our billing is done, but we are going to bring it down to the building level so that we can affect change in our facilities and our buildings, and hopefully highlight successes that we've had. we are going to bring it to the community and be able to show the community the reductions that we've been able to see there. So one of the really cool programs that utility has recently is this home energy report. And it's been sent out to all residents. So about 1,900 customers get it. And Palo Alto actually has one of the lowest opt-out rates. Only 85 customers have said, no, don't send this to me. But what it is a report that compares you to your 100 closest neighbors. Closest meaning similar size home. And I guess you can't really see it that well here, but it sort of compares the last couple months, and then it also compares the last month on the bar chart and tells you how you're doing. On the back side, then it tells you things that you could do and ways that you could save money and the rebates that you could apply for. So it not only tells you where you're at to try to hopefully get that little, competitive spirit in, And then it also gives you a guidance on how to improve you. So we've gotten great, great feedback. I like it. I actually live in Palo Alto, and I know I'm at 5. I'm the 5th percentile, and I'm like, well, who are the other 4 that are better than me? And so it actually has that competitive spirit, and it's a lot of fun. Another program that we have is Palo Alto Green. It's a very, very well-received program. It is a voluntary program, and it through Palo Alto Green, residents and businesses are supporting wildlife-friendly wind and solar facilities in Palo Alto, Oregon, and Montana. So Palo Alto Green customers pay an additional 1.5 cent per kilowatt hour on their utility bill. They opt into this, and it supports renewable energy. So it's very, very widely received, 21% participation rate in Palo Alto, which is fantastic. So I also like to highlight, we actually practice what we preach. We have a very complete and green building ordinance that's often replicated, but we are actually trying to do that as well. We are building a new library and community center, and it is going to be LEED green, gold as well. And it has some of the cool, you know, the PV, it has the white roof, it has a living roof, and all of those sorts of things. But it's important for us not only to require our residents and our businesses to build green, but it's also when we have the opportunity to be able to do it ourselves. So we have to be role models, and I think that's extremely important. However, I'd like to say we're not doing that to City Hall, because it's a very old building. We're upgrading the building management system, but we, you know, there's budgetary constraints on what we can possibly do to make it green. So we have that issue. I also like to highlight our zero waste program. The recycling was started in Palo Alto in the 70s, as I mentioned, but this is a recent initiative. It recognizes that waste is not inevitable, and our waste reduction initiative will probably reduce our emissions for the community 3 or 4%. So it's quite significant, and it's a big component of our initiatives. That said, we are challenged, as many of you may be as well, with redefining our goals, or this redefinition of our challenges, as we say. So you may realize that a lot of trash we can charge money for. Obviously, you get the big bins, you charge more for that. We have less trash, we have smaller bins, we charge less for it, but our fixed infrastructure costs are the same. We only charge for the black bin. We don't charge for recycling. We don't charge for compost. So we are actually having some financial difficulties with this program as a result. So we have one of the highest diversion rates, with 73% recycling. So we have less money coming into our fund. So we're reaching out to our community. As Al mentioned, our community is extremely important in all the initiatives, but this one, particularly now, we've just been reaching out to them to figure out how to potentially redesign our rates or even redesign our system to still reach our zero waste goals and our climate protection plan goals. And with that, it's a group called the Community Environmental Action Partnership, or KEEP. I know we use a hard C there. This was actually formed at the same time we were developing our climate protection plan. And it is a loosely linked community group that meets monthly with segment leaders in all these different segments. And it's important to include all the segments in the community here. And they provide us advice and feedback. And they also reach out to their segments and distribute information or about events or about programs. So it's sort of a network within the community to provide feedback both ways. So it's actually, it's really interesting for them to provide the city feedback and for the city to provide information about programs and initiatives the other way as well, and get feedback on how we should develop things like our zero waste issues. And I think I'm going to close here. So Palo Alto is small, as I mentioned, 66,000 residents, and drop in the bucket with respect to climate change. So I think we need to develop these initiatives, we need to act locally, We need to share best practices. We need to show what we're doing through the wards and through programs and to help other communities do the same. And I think that's extremely important.
Thank you very much. Just for those of you that are getting started, let me just highlight a couple of resources that the previous speakers have talked about. As part of the SEEK collaboration, all three of the nonprofits are developing resources, and as it relates to climate action planning, I want to emphasize the resources that ICLEI has. They're free resources. You can get them on through the SEEK website. Tools for inventories and climate action plans and webinars, and so those resources are available. No charge, you just have to sign up to participate on the SEEK website. The Local Government Commission has done and is going to continue to do a number of webinars and conferences. This is one of them. Lots of good resources there. And, of course, you've heard me talk about the Institute for Local Government's Beacon Award program. We also have a number of other sustainability resources, our best practices framework, lots of activities and options that cities and counties can do, and a number of other resources that we've developed with other funding contracts. Our Commercial Recycling Resource Center is very useful. And I just want to call to your attention as well a new resource that's going to be coming out in November. Actually, I think it's September. The Air Resources Board / Cool California and a number of other partners are about to launch a funding wizard, online funding wizard, and it's going to be great. And you'll hear more about that. So let's open it up to questions and discussion. Before we get started, how many of you in the room are from a city or a county, your city or county staff? Okay. How many of you are a nonprofit or outside organization working with a city or a county that's promoting energy efficiency, sustainability? Excellent. Okay. So let's focus first on the city or county, and I know we have a lot of utility folks here as well. Those are the enablers in the very positive sense of the word to help cities and counties move along with energy efficiency and sustainability. So city and county folks, what questions might you have or experiences that you want to share about getting started, lessons learned, pratfalls, successes, and please identify yourself. And I was asked, I'm supposed to repeat the question so that it can get captured in the recording. Yes, sir.
Hi, James Caruso. I'm with San Luis Obispo County. And I have actually three questions, if I could. First one's for Al. Al, can you talk a little bit about what you did about things that were important to people in your community but weren't quantifiable, either in your inventory or your reduction strategies?
Let's do these one at a time. Right. This question is for Al. And this is gentleman is from San Luis Obispo County. I'm sorry, I can't remember your name. And Al, what did you do about, how did you handle issues or questions that were important to people in the community but weren't quantifiable?
That's a good question Mr. Caruso brings up. It's that we did find out. First of all, there was a great deal of input like that in the community workshops. I could just emphasize what we did is give people real voice and encourage a dialogue through our website and community and a dialogue with others. We try to put together groups too, who are kind of for maybe a misnomer, like an interest group. People who are interested in community gardens, you're right, that's not quantifiable. Or I mentioned complete streets or, you know, safe routes to school. Things like that, expanding parks, urban agriculture. There's a group also that's interested in having local, how would I call it, local grocery outlets in all zones, things like that. So we try to put people together and encourage them to develop their own plans. And this is where the general, in Luisa Vieja, too wordy, I know a lot. This is where it really fits. We're going to take this input in the Green City Initiative, and the latest is that we've decided, I think, to have a separate element in the general plan. This was not going to be the way it was dealt with before, but from a saving money standpoint on the environmental documentation later on, it probably makes a lot of sense for us. So we want to incorporate that, kind of do something really different in a green element. That's how we're going to give voice to that kind of non-quantifiable or qualitative concern. And that's one of the reasons we're doing it, not simply just to save money, but I think it can be done like that, at least for us, and Lisa.
And I was just informed that I don't have to repeat the question to have it captured. So please, your
and
next
if I
question.
I could, just a second question, because
yes.
This is something that has bothered us for quite some time in the county, and this is for Deborah. You're from the city manager's office, so you, of course, have a whip hand for your agency directors, telling them they have to cooperate with these programs. That's great.
Sure.
But how do you go about, you said you're a drop in the bucket, the city of Palo Alto. What type of cooperative actions are you taking with the other cities and the county? What county are you in? San Mateo? So what are you doing with the other cities?
Santa Clara.
And Santa Clara County to make these plans work together as much as you can.
Sure, thank you. I'm not sure whether I actually have a whip hand, but I am fortunate to be in the city manager's office, and it's actually a good position because you can work cross-departmentally quite effectively there, and many cities, many organizations are siloed, and sometimes that is a challenge to actually get things done. But yes, we are dropping back. We are only a city of 66,000 residents. We have many initiatives. We work within our county on with many groups, with Bay Area Climate Collaborative. We work with Silicon Valley Leadership Group. There's a joint venture Silicon Valley group that talks about climate action planning. We also work with Sustainable Silicon Valley on initiatives, and they work with both cities and businesses. So we do work on many of these things, but also globally. So we have an interest from our council to actually promote Palo Alto globally, and some of the council members out of their own pocket do travel and do presentations on sustainability and the issues that Palo Alto does hold dear. We had a council member go to Dublin. Actually, he was a mayor that when he went there to talk about it. And we had another one go to China, and we actually signed on to a six cities initiative. Six cities in the U.S. and six cities in China are working together and to share best practices. And I think that's very, very important. I mean, Palo Alto can do things, but being such a small city, we have to make sure we collaborate with other cities, both locally and internationally, because many of these environmental issues just don't stop at the Palo Alto border. They go beyond, and they are global in scope.
You know, there are a number of really excellent collaborations locally, either on a single county basis or multi-county. Deborah talked about joint venture Silicon Valley Leadership, and that's San Mateo and Santa Clara counties, the counties and all the cities.
ABAG,
of course. Yolo County has the Yolo County Climate Compact, which is wonderful. San Diego County, working with the San Diego Foundation, ICLEI and SDG&E, the city and all the counties get, the county and all the cities get together. Any other questions? Well, let me pose this to the group. How many of you city or county folks already have completed a greenhouse gas inventory for your agency facilities? Okay. How many of you have already completed a greenhouse gas inventory for the community as a whole? All right. How many of you are working on, in the middle of getting started, an inventory for your agency facilities? Okay. What about getting started on one for the community as a whole? Okay. How many of you haven't done either? haven't gotten started. So is that, then it's fair to say that of the city and county folks here, everybody either is in the process or has completed an inventory for agency facilities in the community. Wow, that's great. All right, let's move to, are you from a city or county?
No, I'd just like to ask Al a question.
Can we hang on for a second, please? Thank you. Let's talk about climate action planning. How many of you are from a city or a county that have completed a climate action plan for your agency facilities? How many of you are in the process of it? Okay, excellent. And I know sometimes these are combined. What about those, how many of you are in the process of starting a climate action plan for the community as a whole? Starting it, all right, I know I haven't done these in order. What about those of you that have completed a climate action plan for the community as a whole, all right? And any, how about those of you that haven't done either, completed it or started it for either your agency facilities or the community? Okay, well, this is a good group. I would, anybody have any advice or lessons learned about doing inventories or climate action planning? Yes, Fremont, please take the mic.
You face that way, and everybody's that way, but.
You can face out, that's fine.
Hi, colleagues, I'm Amy Rakeley with the City of Fremont. I'm a staff member and I'm writing our climate action plan.
And why don't you, that's right, turn the mic around. There you go,
there we
good.
Go. Sorry. And I was at council a week and a half ago and basically got the green light to go ahead and finish up the plan. The draft chapters are on our website if you want to take a look. The main comment I want to make to everybody here is I have real issues with the ICLEI methodology of greenhouse gas emissions simply because it ends up giving you what look like very specific and solid numbers. And I think the importance of the inventories is it gives us a sense of scale of things. So for example, different cities find out, well, transportation is a big issue or wastewater, whatever. But I think the problem is that makes people and our most importantly the community and our decision makers focus too much on the numbers as if they reflect some kind of scientific truth, which they don't. So I struggled for about a year about how to deal with that, and what I finally ended up doing was talking about the inventory numbers as a way of, again, giving us a sense of scale of things. And I think it's going to be interesting in California as cities then do their next inventories, because that's going to be when they start seeing, after they've started supposedly implementing some actions, that's when they're going to start seeing, you know, what kind of progress are they or aren't they making. And that can end up being a really difficult time for decision makers and communities, because things could go in the different direction. I mean, we don't necessarily know that things are going to get better. So I would just caution anybody who might be doing that, don't get stuck on the numbers. Also, if your council adopts an emission reduction goal, I don't know about you, but our numbers were so outrageously huge, given that we're a big community, that we realized we weren't going to get anywhere without the state initiatives, the renewable portfolio standard, the low carbon fuel standard, and so on. So when I came to understand that, that became part of our narrative, is that there's not a chance in hell we're going to be able to achieve 700,000 metric tons CO2 reductions in our community. There's no way. So I'm happy to chat with anybody who wants any sort of input or thoughts about doing a plan for your community. I'd also like to talk to you about, Yvonne, about I think we need more peer-to-peer support on these issues.
Yeah. And I'm going to remind everybody, someone once said that the procedures for doing a greenhouse gas inventory is an evolving art.
Oh my gosh.
And I think that's a key thing. Al or Deborah, do you want to add anything?
Yeah, if I can just add to that, I have to reiterate, don't get stuck on the numbers. We did our climate protection plan, is what we call it, in 2007, and those numbers have evolved. And many of those numbers are just, if I can be so bold as saying, wild-ass guesses. I mean, really, transportation. There's no clear methodology, or there certainly was not in 2007, agreed upon technology or methodology to estimate what those emissions are. And the difficulty that we have is we have those numbers, we've made them public, and now we have to compare against them. And now we have new ways of calculating, we have new things like EVs coming online, And then when, how do we calculate those reductions in emissions in transportation versus the increased electricity use from the EVs? I mean, like, you're balancing things off, and it may not be fair to say, you know, what to do, and where the council or the city should invest in dollars. Is sometimes they look at these numbers as if they're perfect, and that's not fair. I also like to say that I'm actually working with ICLEI. I'm on the a task force for the development of the community protocol that they're developing. Hopefully be out this winter. I'm on, specifically on the built environment task force. And we debate what we should include and how to include it and how the methodology for the calculation should happen, because we realize that once you do calculate it, once you actually have a methodology or a calculation, the council or the community will focus on that and say, you need a initiative or a program to reduce that. But then you might be missing something else. So it's a catch-22 sometimes, and it's difficult. It's difficult. And we are about to re-report our emissions to council, and we're going to have to change the baseline again, and we have to change because the methodology has changed, and we're including this but not that, and everybody gets very confused. So I think don't get stuck on the numbers. It's very accurate. It's about the initiatives. It's about the perspective of initiatives and the impact those initiatives can have.
So. Al, do you want to say anything?
No.
Okay.
Other than echoing that, what was spoken about, it's about the initiatives. I completely agree, and the impact that the initiatives have on that. At least that's actually our experience. Yeah.
Monica, do you want to add anything? Monica's interim California director of ICLEI. Talk about the evolving art.
All right. I will just briefly build on what Deborah said and tell you that ICLEI completely understands the problems with the methodology. But what we try to do is provide tools and resources so that our wild-ass guesses are the same across the board, so that when we're comparing one city to another city. That being said, within the methodology, there is a lot of flexibility to make it fit your end game. So my main advice would be look at where you're trying to go with your inventory and then backfill from there, so that if you're trying to gain CEQA compliance, there's a certain set of very rigid expectations, and you want to start so that you can get to the end appropriately. The methodologies are evolving. They're evolving underneath us as we create our tools based on state policy and what is known scientifically. So we are trying very hard to stay on top of that and keep our tools flexible so that they present the most current methodologies out there. But I would also say that there's a great resource out there, the California SEEC, SEEC.org, that has a lot of new tools that you can feed information into so that you can tell that story without getting so hung up on the numbers. But it's a very valid point that ICLEI understands.
Anybody else? For those of you that are engaged in climate action planning and want to be able to use that product as it relates to future projects or policies for CEQA compliance, the Institute is about to go out to peer review, probably Monday, for a guide that we're developing on understanding the new CEQA guidelines as it relates to climate change and greenhouse gas emissions. And I won't say we hope to. We will have it out, unless I get run over by a truck. We will have it out by early September. That is the goal, early to mid-September. And we've worked with a fabulous attorney, and we have a wonderful group of peer reviewers. So that will be a resource, because it will include a section on making your climate action plans CEQA ready, if you want. Yes, sir. I want to make sure, is there anybody else city countywide? Okay, please, sir.
Thanks. I'll face it. This is for Palo Alto. Hi, my name is Richard Silver. I'm with Green Energy Agents. Kudos to Palo Alto, of course, but we would expect nothing less. I'm a Berkeley graduate, but I'll give Stanford their due. Question. You've clearly been much more efficient than many other civic entities. So I have two parts to the question. One is, as a result of the work you've done, particularly under your purview, have you been able to increase operating efficiencies within city government, specifically to reduce personnel and eliminate any overlap or redundancies in peoples and departments that you work with? And two is, what's your ROI been on the city's budgetary investment in energy efficiency? You built a water treatment plant as an example. What's your ROI on that? How do the best practices or the financial budgetary constraints become improved, if you will, by adopting and deploying your dollar assets into energy efficiencies? And then how do you share that, either publicly on your website or through reports or committees, to all of these other city folks? Just a quick aside, I live in San Francisco and I'm working with one of the mayoral groups on their transportation policy. We found that in San Francisco, $6.7 billion annual budget, 26,000 public employees on the county and city payroll. State of California has 100,000 people.
Why don't we focus on energy
efficiency? So I'm just saying on
now,
the
okay?
on the budgetary side, which all of us
we're
going to
focus on the energy. If you asked some really good questions of Deborah.
Certainly. Thank you so much. Yeah. No, Palo Alto has done an awful lot, and we do have a number of facilities within the city of Palo Alto. I believe it's about 130 facilities, including parks and like the theater and the libraries and things like that. We don't really have accurate numbers on ROIs for investment, but we do have a council-mandated efficiency number, so to speak, within our budget. So we, within our budget every year, we have to prove that we have saved X amount, and last year was $600,000. So on our budget line item is efficiency measures that the city have taken, and this is how much we save. So that is public, and that is a goal, and every year we are increasing it. So it is recognized that the initiatives, our energy efficiency measures, our climate protection initiatives, do result in cost savings for the operating, the city's operating budget. We haven't developed, and we have talked about a revolving fund, so the savings would then fund additional initiatives. We haven't been able to do that, partly because the budgets are cross-departmental and things like that. So we have to resolve that. It's been much discussion in having that. I know other cities are looking at that, and I think there's a discussion on that this afternoon about that. So that is definitely something you guys may want to look at. Do you have anything to add about that? No? Okay. No, we have not, but we have had a number of initiatives where different departments work together, and so we do have sort of time savings, obviously. So if you work together on certain, say, water-saving initiatives that our utility department works with, our public works department, and so forth. It doesn't directly relate to employee count.
A lot of what we found, cities and counties with the savings, they're able to reinvest those savings in either greater efficiencies, programs for sustainability, or to be able to provide the programs and services that the community wants. And certainly having a more efficient city or county work staff is a good way to go. Any other questions? Well, we're right. Yes, sir. This will be the last one because we're running up against noon, but thank you.
Thank you. Garrett Fitzgerald, City of Oakland.
Garrett, I thought I recognized you. Hello.
And I want to put in a plug for the next climate planning session that's happening early afternoon. James and I are presenting. It's going to be really good. We'll get into some of the serious nuts and bolts of how we went through the planning process. But one thing I thought was really interesting here, this use of the Hurrah software for reporting. And this is something we all struggle with. And how do you tell the story of what the numbers are? How do you tell the story of the progress you're making? But how much does it cost to tell the story this way? How hard is it? How much staff time does it take to kind of keep that kind of a tool up to date? Is it worth it versus making our own graphs in Excel and putting them up on our website? What's your experience really been kind of using that kind of software tool?
Sure. It's not free. So my experience is initially it did cost us money. I believe to use it is about $20,000 a year. We did have significant staff time to set it up. And we still struggle with some of the setup. We're trying to automate it so that it will require no staff time. We actually don't have one staff that's dedicated to that. It's me basically. And what we're trying to do is make it fully automated with our utility bill. We have an SAP system that has all the information now. Originally, we were, like many of you guys, doing Excel spreadsheets, and different departments had their Excel spreadsheets, different departments had their different emissions factors and different ways of calculating. This was in, that was out, this was in, out. And we had different departments reporting differently on those numbers. And the struggle that we had was there's no confidence if the public works department, the utility department, the planning department, and then the city manager's office all report a different emissions number for the same thing, like that it doesn't work. So I think part of the value in Harari software similar to that is to actually have it all together, have all the data in one place with historical emissions so we know where we were, where we stood. We all agreed upon that. It's in a simple dashboard that you can cut it in many different ways. You can view it with emissions, with consumption. You can view it with costs because the multiplier could be in various forms. And then we could break it down by building. I mean, if you were to do an Excel spreadsheet, that is very onerous, very, very onerous. That said, we have challenges. I mean, our billing system is not perfect. It's not tied to buildings. It's tied to meters. And sometimes we don't know what meter is where. We are currently going through that because I think it would just be optimal if I didn't really do anything and every month all the information just went up to Hurrah and then went on a dashboard. I mean, that's the goal. But there are challenges just because our data, there's so much data and to get it organized is difficult. So it is valuable. So if it's not one person, it's the Hurrah is what the goal is.
Okay, I'd like to thank both Deborah and Al. These were wonderful presentations. Thanks to all of you for participating, sharing your questions and insights. And let's give the speakers a round of applause. And I believe the next session is lunch next door. Thank you very much.